welcome back to another episode of Almost Well Versed. Can you believe it? The podcast is back. Like, even I'm in disbelief, you know? And look at this. We're on camera. Can you believe it, guys? Oh, my gosh. Guys, so we're back, actually. Not a joke. Sound the alarms. Gab is back. And today we're going to talk about a lot of stuff because it's actually been 2 years. August makes 2 years that I haven't done a podcast episode. So I feel like it's only right for us to talk about what's been going on. You know, like 2 years is a lot of time to be reading and watching media and stuff. So I'm pretty much this episode, we're just going to do like a little chit chat, you know. We're going to try out this whole camera mic situation. We're just going to talk about, I was going to make a top five list, and I don't even know how many books I picked. I just picked like my favorite reads since last time we talked, you know. So we're just going to talk about the best things that I've read since last we spoke. And I actually have a bonus at the end. A bonus entry, not quite a book, but it's still media. Cause here's the thing, guys, we're in the season two era. You know what I mean? Like we had our setup arc, we had our character development arc, and now we're in the meat and potatoes. You know what I mean? Like season two, that's when, you know, your characters, you got your setup, you know, your world building, and now we're in it, you know? So we're just gonna go over some neat books that I've read in the past 2 years. And my goal is, with bringing the podcast back, doing this season two, new and improved, we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, not just books. Because the whole thing is, I always, from the beginning, marketed the podcast like books and other things. Because the thing is, like, yeah, I'm really passionate about books and I read a lot, but like, I just like to talk about the things that I enjoy, you know what I mean? So that could be music, that could be shows, movies, but mostly books. So today, we're going to stick with what we know. We're going to talk about, this is my six favorite things that I've read since we last spoke, plus my bonus entry. And just stay tuned, guys, because I've got some good grade A content planned. And I'm very excited for it. We've got to have some special guests. Dazmir is coming back. Can't forget about Daz. And yeah, we're going to have a great time. So let's just hop right into it, you know? So book number one, and look at this, guys. I actually have physical books. Like, I'm like one of the only people I know that still reads physical books. So I literally have a stack of books next to me. So don't mind my shuffling. But book number one we're going to talk about. I read this end of 2020, but I actually had read it. This was a reread. Like, I had read this book before. So the book is called Never Let Me Go. Oh, can this focus, please? Look at me. There we go. Never Let Me Go by Kazuya Ishigaru. This book came out in 2015. No, I lied to you. It came out in 2005. And like I said, I have read it before, and you know, it's a cute little book. It's not very long. Let's see. This one is only, watch, I'm going to say it's not very long and it's going to be like 300. No. So yeah, it's only 288 pages. Like that's a weekend read, guys. Like that's nothing. But yeah, so this book came out in 2005. If you look it up on Goodreads, I don't know how many people still use Goodreads. I feel like I'm one of the only people I know that's still on this website. But if you look it up on Goodreads, it's got a 3.84 rating, which I mean is decent. You know, that's like above average. But this is like right up my alley. It's a dystopian type science fiction book, which is like literally dystopian future type books. Those are my favorite. Other than fantasy, those are like my favorite types of books. And the thing about this book is when it came out in 2005, it was really well received. It was shortlisted for the 2005 Booker Prize, the 2006 Arthur C. Clarke Award. It won the 2005 National Book Critics Circle Award. Like, you see what I mean? Like, I'm just naming off awards here. And it was also named Time Magazine's Book of the Year for 2005, which is really impressive. And I want to say, I need to look it up, but I think this was his first book. I could be lying to you. No, I am definitely lying to you. It says he's the author of seven novels. including Never Let Me Go and another really popular book called The Remains of the Day, which I haven't read. But yeah, so summary of this story is, like I said, it's a dystopia. It's set in the future, some far off, not so far off, distant future. And it follows these three kids that are at a school. It's like a boarding school type situation, in a secluded English countryside. And the right off the bat when you're reading this book, you're like, something is weird here, because all the teachers, like, yeah, they're in a boarding school, you know, so you got class, you got math class, you got your, you know, writing and English class, but there's this weird air of the teachers always talking about how special the kids are and how when they grow up, they're going to fulfill this great duty that they are entitled to have. And you're like, what is this about? And so the first the first third, maybe a little more than the first third of the book is when they're kids, like set in the school, and it follows the main three, which is Kathy, Ruth, and Tommy, which are like three best friends. And then it has like a time skip to where they're adults, and then you're following just Kathy when she's a young woman. And Kathy is like a hospice aide. She goes from like hospice to hospice and is like a companion for people that are in hospice. But the weird thing is these people, because usually when you think hospice, you think older people, you know, like elderly, but the people in these hospices are like not that old. Like they're her peers, like people around the same age as her, if only a little bit older. So you're trying to, you start piecing stuff together about what is really going on. Like why are all of these like mid 30 somethings in hospice and dying? Really weird, but here's the thing. It is short, but the writing is so beautifully done and it's such a impactful book. Like, I reread things, but there's like a short list of things that I like actively will, you know, every year, every couple years, I go back and reread, and Never Let Me Go is definitely one of them. I would definitely say check this one out. It's not that long. Like I said, it's beautifully written. The prose is so beautiful. The story is like so heart touching. It's really, really a good novel. I say check it out. And then a little fun fact about it, this book was actually written, it was adapted into a movie in 2010, and believe it or not, main characters are Andrew Garfield and Keira Knightley, if you recognize either of those names. And then when I was doing research for this episode, I found that FX is currently in development of making a TV show for it, so if you're interested, I would definitely say check out the book, because I haven't watched the movie, so I can't vouch for that, but I do know that the movie is on Disney Plus, but you do have to, and granted, I haven't seen it, nor have I cared to do this, but you just have to make sure that on your Disney Plus account that you have it to where you can watch R-rated movies, because the thing is, if you don't do that, R-rated movies won't even show up for you. So when I Googled it, it said that the movie was on Disney Plus, and then when I logged into my Disney Plus to just see it, it didn't even show up in the search list. But yeah, Never Let Me Go, definitely check it out. What am I going to give it? I'm going to give it like an 8.5 out of 10. Great book. Great. All right. Where am I going to put this? Here. Ugh. All right. Next up on the list. Let's see. This was a big one. This one is called Bridge of Clay by Marcus Zusak. You might recognize him from The Book Thief. And the thing about Marcus Zusak is he's been one of my favorite authors. Like, ever since I was young enough to start recognizing authors and seeking out other books written by the same author, I think Marcus Zusak is really like that first one that I really enjoyed. Because I remember the first book I read from him was called I Am the Messenger. And I can't remember if I've done an episode on that or not, but that's like one of the books I always recommend to people. Like, if you're looking for a funny, short, kind of bizarre type book, I Am the Messenger is so good. Like, so good. And then he's also written The Book Thief, which when I tell you, when I read that book as a teenager, like, I cried real tears in that book. Like, that book had me fucked up, bro. Like, fucked up. And ever since The Book Thief, like, I was really hooked. I was like, Marcus Zusak is the greatest author I've ever seen. Like, he's fantastic, right? So he's written those. He has, like, another little trilogy. What is that? Damn, what's that one called? It's something about Reuben Wolf. Let's see. This is the beauty of being at the computer, is that I can Google things. Marcus Zusak. Let's see. Works. The Messenger. Oh, yeah. So the very first book that he wrote was called Fighting Reuben Wolf, which is another short, kind of cool story. And then there's like a sequel, a kind of sequel, not so much sequel, called Getting the Girl / When Dogs Cry. And so after I had read The Book Thief and I read I'm the Messenger, I just went out and I read everything that he's written, including those two. But anyway, back to Bridge of Clay. So Bridge of Clay is his most recent novel. I say most recent, but this came out in 2018. The interesting thing about Marcus Zusak is his books are technically categorized as young adult, but I feel like even with like The Book Thief and I'm the Messenger, like even though all three of these books are categorized as young adult, they all talk about topics and themes that, well, I guess would be present in young adult films or young adult books, but can definitely be enjoyed by actual adults. So yeah, this one came out in 2018. If you look it up on Goodreads, it's got a 3.8 rating, which is pretty good. I mean, yeah. I mean, Never Let Me Go was a 3.84, so it's like not that far off. And the only award of note that I could find for this one, it was shortlisted for the 2019 Indie Book Awards, which I mean is pretty good. And the thing about this story is it follows five brothers, right? And the one thing about Marcus Zusak, like any of his books that you read, and I highly recommend that you at least check out I Am the Messenger, because that one's short, like how Never Let Me Go is. The Book Thief is definitely bigger, and you saw this hunk of book. This is a big one. But he tells the story, like, non-linearly. So, you know, you'll have some scenes or some chapters that are set here, and then the next little bit would be set in the future. Some of them will be set behind. So then, like, as you're reading, you're kind of piecing everything together to make the whole story, you know what I mean? So this one definitely does that. And it follows five brothers that are coming to terms with the disappearance of their father. So there are these five younger boys that kind of live, I mean, they're not like in the bad part of town, but like they aren't rich by any means, you know what I mean? And so their mom gets sick, like she gets sick, and she ends up dying. And then right around the same time that she dies, their dad literally just disappears, like just leaves. And so it's up to the older siblings to then raise the younger siblings. And then the story actually follows the youngest brother, and his name is Clay. And Clay is, I mean, he was a kid, like when his mom died, when their mom died and when the dad left. So he's like the only one that isn't like bitter toward his dad. It's more like a curiosity as to like, why did you leave? So he takes it upon himself to like seek out their dad, even though the other brothers like don't want him to do that. And this book was so beautifully written. And the thing that's so funny is when you look up, so like I said, when I was doing research for the episode and I'm looking up, you know, like reviews and like critic reviews and everything of all the books that are on this list, a lot of people criticized Bridge of Clay for being like meandering or being like too wordy. But that's one, that's kind of the thing with Marcus Zusak, like that's just like his prose, like he's pretty wordy. So you, if you don't like that, then you're not gonna like his book, you know what I mean? But then also I feel like the meandering road that you take throughout the novel to get to the end, it was so satisfying. And the thing is, reading Bridge of Clay, I haven't read a book in a minute. Granted, I was just talking about Never Let Me Go that I cried real tears. But, like, I had read that before. So, like, I was expecting what was going to happen. You know, that was emotional. But the thing is, Bridge of Clay, this was a first read for me. And so, when it gets to, like, the climax, like, when I tell you I was crying, like, actively crying, like, can't see the pages crying while I'm reading it because it was just so, oh, it was so good. Like, the way everything comes together at the end and just like the relationship between the brothers and like, I don't know. I definitely say, like, I would recommend this book. I don't know if it's for everybody, but I really, really enjoyed it. I would say, if anything, if you're new to Marcus Zusak, if you've never read anything from him, I definitely say you should read I'm the Messenger. That's such a good, short, funky little book. And I think I actually own two copies of that book. So I would say, if you're interested in checking out Marcus Zusak, check out I Am the Messenger. If you fuck with that, then definitely check out The Book Thief, because The Book Thief is, like, granted, I haven't read it in a while, but when I was reading it actively, like, in my teens, like, my early 20s, like, that was, like, top five books that I've ever read. Like, again, the journey that you take through everything. So, yeah, if you're gonna read Marcus Zusak, the order I say is I Am the Messenger, then The Book Thief, and then if you enjoy The Book Thief, you'll enjoy Bridge of Clay. That final verdict. So let's see, rating out of 10. Let's see, I gave Never Let Me Go an 8.5, so I think I'll give Bridge of Clay gets a solid 8, I would say. A solid 8. That's not too bad, you know? It's definitely way above average, but it's not a perfect book. But, you know, who's out here looking for perfect books, you know? All right, where can I put this? It's so large. Okay, next up on my list, this one is definitely a more popular book. I feel like I've definitely seen a lot more people talk about this one, but it's called The Kite Runner. And you can tell this book is well-loved. It's just a little bit beat up. And this one is written by Khalid Hossein. I really should have looked up how to say these names. Khalid Hosseini. Hang on. Let's check out Google. Let's see how they say to pronounce his last name. Hosseini. Yep, here he is. Can you pronounce it for me? Pronunciation. No, like, I want the Google Translate lady to pronounce it for me. Like, I don't need a YouTube video. Ugh. Anyway, you saw the book. You saw the cover. You saw what it looks like. So, The Kite Runner. Man, talk about an emotional novel. So this book came out in 2003, and this was actually the first novel that he wrote. Unlike with Never Let Me Go, this was actually his first novel. And the crazy thing is, it not only was it his first novel, but it was actually a New York Times bestseller for over 2 years after it came out, which is crazy. But I've read this book many times. I think I've read this book like 3 or 4 times. And the thing is, when you take a long enough break in between it, you forget, like, you remember the main things about it for sure, but you forget a lot of the little connecting pieces. So on the reread, like, it's just as satisfying as the first time you read it. And let's see. Yeah, so this one, like I said, New York Times bestseller for over 2 years. It has a 4.33 rating on Goodreads, which, I mean, is pretty good. People on Goodreads are harsh critics, if you couldn't tell. And this story, it tells the story of a young boy named Amir, who was born and raised in Kabul, Afghanistan. And it starts out in the mid-1970s to where, when Afghanistan was still, like the affluent parts of Afghanistan were still really affluent. And so Amir, he came from an affluent family. Like, his dad was really well off. They lived in a nice house, like, had a housekeeper, were, like, well to do. And so it follows them from the late 1970s as he's growing up, until the Soviet Union militarily intervened in Afghanistan, and Amir and his father literally had to get smuggled out of the country, and they fled to the United States and had to literally start their lives over. And the thing that I really enjoy about this novel is, yeah, it does follow Amir. Like, it is it's Amir. It's almost like, because here's the thing. The Kite Runner, it's, like, based on a true story. Like, Amir isn't a real guy, but the story that Amir goes through mirrors what happened in real life, I think, to the author. I really should have done more research, huh? But the thing that's neat about this book is, yeah, it's telling the story of Amir, but it is truly multi-generational, because you get attached to his dad, because the two of them, like I said, get smuggled out of Afghanistan and have to flee to the United States. So you're following both of them, and it's so interesting to see how Amir adapts to being in a new country, and how his dad is kind of stuck in his ways and is clinging to, like, what he knew from, I mean, rightfully so, it's everything he ever knew was living in Afghanistan and getting forced to move to this new, this completely new country with new culture, new customs, new language, everything, and how they have to adapt and thrive in this new country. And so when they flee, when they get to the United States, Amir is like 11, like 10 or 11, like he's really young. And you, the story follows him through adulthood, you know, meeting his wife and getting married, and how her family, like, accepts him and everything, and following the dad as he's getting older. And yeah, it was just, it's such an interesting novel, and it was a really heartfelt novel. Like, there was a lot of emotion that went into this book, which I really appreciated, because Middle Eastern history is not something I'm really familiar with, so, like, experiencing this novel through, like, this autobiographical sense in this first-person point of view was really interesting, and I really enjoyed it. I would definitely say check out Kite Runner. You know, like I've been saying, it was on everybody's list for so long of, like, best novels. And once again, you want to talk about crying real tears? Like, the first time I read this book, like, it doesn't happen often, but I literally had to put the book down because I could not read. Like, I was so emotional about, like, the way everything came together. Like, God, the ending is so beautiful. Like, man, definitely recommend Kite Runner straight up gets like a 9 out of 10 rating from me because it's so good. And granted, like, it seems long, but like I said, it's literally a multi-generational story to where it's starting when Amir is like an infant. Like, the book starts when he's born and it follows him all the way through adulthood. So, like, and yeah, there are some time skips in there, but even though it seems long, like, page count, let's see. Because I think this book has an excerpt from his other book. Oh, it actually doesn't. But let's see. This one clocks in at about 340 pages. So, I mean, no, I lied to you. It clocks in at 371. Which, I mean, for me, not that long. For an average reader, you know, it would be an investment. But the story is beautiful. The way that the author writes is so refreshing. I definitely recommend it. Definitely check it out. Kite Runner, 9 out of 10. You get a round of applause from me. So good. Oh, so good. All right. Now we're getting to... So here's the thing. The last three books I talked about, Never Let Me Go, Kite Runner, and Bridge of Clay, they made it on the list. So, like, I really did enjoy them. But these next books we're going to talk about are, like, top tier, like, creme de la creme. Like, it's been 2 years, and I'm still thinking / talking about these books, okay? So, first we're gonna talk about this crazy-ass book, bro. You wanna talk about a crazy ride? God, The Library at Mount Char. Like, the cover, like, you're looking at the cover, and you don't even know what the fuck you're looking at. Like, is that a bullet hole? Is that fire? Like, what? The Library at Mount Char by a man called Scott Hawkins. This book was written in 2015, and it was actually his first novel, which is so surprising. Like, oh, so surprising. This book has a 4.09 rating on Goodreads, and believe it or not, the only reason why I knew about this book is I can't remember if I've spoken about it before, but I follow a subreddit. I follow a subreddit on Reddit called Book Suggestions, where people will just be like, hey, I like X book, can you recommend me something like it? Or I'm looking for a book about pirates, and then people will just give suggestions. And so I saw this list, it was end of 2020, I believe, and a lot of people were doing like their top lists for the year, like top 5 or, you know, top 10 book for the year, and this was on so many people's lists to where I was like, and you know, the thing on Reddit, there's a lot of people on Reddit, a lot of differing opinions, a lot of differing tastes, so I was like, okay, if this is showing up on like multiple people's list, I gotta check it out. And here's the kicker. I know what's on this list, and I know I'm literally about to rave about it, but I can't, out of good faith, I can't tell you what the book is about. Because there's some things in life that are best experienced completely blind. And I know, in particular, there is going to be a listener that's angry with me for not explaining the book. But there are some things in life that are best experienced with no spoilers going in blind. And this 1,000 million percent is one of those stories. So, and the thing is, like, when you read the thing on the sleeve to explain, you know, like the summary of the book, like even that is really vague and doesn't really tell you about the story. But I'm just gonna try and get you in there, but then I'm not gonna explain the story. So here's the thing. Reading this book really truly felt like a fever dream. Like from page one of this book, it really felt like am I tripping on something? Like it really felt like a fever dream. Like it was insanity. So the little blurb thing, like I just looked it up on Goodreads. The little blurb thing says, a missing god, a library with the secrets to the universe, a woman too busy to notice her heart slipping away. So the book follows this girl named Carolyn, and her and her adopted siblings. So she was abandoned as a young child and was adopted by this guy. Like, he's a good guy. Adopted by this guy. And she has a handful of adopted siblings that all, you know, had similar situations as her, were abandoned or left as kids. And this guy adopted them. And he runs this library that's, like, right outside of town. And the book starts and you're following Carolyn, and she just doesn't seem right. Like, yeah, she's like out and about, you know, but it's like she doesn't really, you can tell that like she doesn't feel comfortable like being around other people, being out in public, like she's wearing weird clothes and like doesn't know how to use her cell phone and like is wearing mismatched shoes. And she meets this guy who like notices this, and he was like, ma'am, are you okay? But she doesn't know like how to, you know, talk to him, like bring him into what's going on or whatever. And so the book is really following Carolyn as she pretty much, she's trying to figure out what their adoptive dad is up to. Like, what does he actually do? Like, yeah, he runs this library, but there's like a lot of secrets in the library, and there's places that they're not allowed to go, and her siblings are weird. And that's the thing, like, I just can't really, without spoiling the book, like, you just can't really, it's one of those where you really can't talk about it without spoiling it. And for me, I loved it. Like, it was, god, it was so good. It really felt like a fever dream. Like, you literally, the whole book, like, the entire time I'm reading this book, I literally cannot anticipate what is going to happen next. I'm like, where, Carolyn, what are you doing? Like, what is happening, you know? God, it was so interesting. I definitely recommend The Library of Mount Char. For any of you out there that are on Reddit and are interested in books, I definitely suggest checking out the book suggestion subreddit. I found a lot of the a good amount of books on my list are actually, I found from that subreddit, or were recommended by people on that subreddit. So yeah, check it out, /book suggestions, The Library of Mount Char. That gets like a 9.5 out of 10. Like, for me, it was, what a ride. God, what a wild ride. And I know that's like so anticlimactic because I'm raving about this book so hard, but like, I didn't even say anything about it. All I talked about was this girl named Carolyn and how she's weird. But like, that's all I could tell you. And that's all you need to know going into it. There's a girl, she's weird, adopted by a guy. She's got a bunch of weird ass adoptive siblings, and their dad is weird and has a lot of secrets going on in their library, and she's trying to figure out what's going on. Check it out. All right. Next up on my list, we're going to talk about The Wheel of Time. Wheel of Time, written by the one and only Robert Jordan. Rest in peace. The first Wheel of Time book is called The Eye of the World. This book came out. Hang on, let me get to my notes. Dang, I didn't even write notes for this one. Oh, what am I doing? The Eye of the World. Because here's the thing. I'm planning on doing, like, a proper Wheel of Time episode, talking about the book and talking about the show. For anybody unaware, there is a show on Amazon that covers, like, season one. Yeah, like, all of season one. So I'm planning on doing dedicating a full episode to it, so I'm not gonna go too much into it. That's probably also why I didn't write any fucking notes, like, anyway. So, Eye of the World, it was released in 1990, and the thing is, it's the first of a 15 book series, which sounds insane. But here's the thing, I know I've talked about Brandon Sanderson a lot before, I'm gonna continue talking about him a lot, but the reason why Brandon Sanderson, like, got his like claim to fame is, so Robert Jordan was like deep in the series, and I can't remember if he was sick or what, but he was dying. And he literally called upon Brandon Sanderson and said, "Here, my son, finish my book series for me." And Brandon Sanderson was like a super big Wheel of Time fan. So he was like, "All right, bet." And so he wrote, I think, the last three books of the series. And actually, the fans really enjoyed it. People, when something like that happens where, like, there's, like, a long series and then either the author dies or doesn't continue it, you know, it's always kind of scary because you don't know if the replacement is going to have the same vision or, you know what I mean? Like, you just don't know if they're going to be able to have, like, the same, like, author's voice as the original author. But apparently, Brandon Sanderson did, like, a bang-up job, and that's how he got well-known in the fantasy genre. And so then whenever Brandon Sanderson finally came out with his first book, Elantris, it was really well received, and a lot of Wheel of Time fans came over and read his novel and promoted it, and that's kind of what got him big. So you love to see it. But yeah, so Eye of the World is the first of a 15 book series, and it follows these three kids that come from this little, like, podunk town called the Two Rivers. And so the thing is, it's a fantasy novel, 100%. So it's set in, like, this fantasy type world. But yeah, so these three kids, they're from, like, this little podunk town, like, at the edge of wherever. Like, all they know is the town. People that live there have never left, you know what I mean? Like, they're really rural, like, that's all they know. But then one day, this, like, magic witch lady and her bodyguard fighter man show up, and they're looking for who's called the Dragon Reborn. And so the thing is, man, I feel like I'm doing a disservice to explaining what this novel is about. So if you're at all familiar with Brandon Sanderson, like how his, like, magic system is, or like his world building is, he takes a lot of inspiration from Robert Jordan, how he wrote and like how he set up Wheel of Time. So to set it up, you have this world to where their magic system, and you find this out more as you read, but their magic system works in a way in which only the women can access the magic. And if you're trained, like, if you can access this magic, like, if you can touch the magic and are able to channel it, these women can go off and be trained and become what's called Aes Sedai. And Aes Sedai are, like, they're pretty much witches. Like, not bad, in a way, because the thing is, like, Aes Sedai, they'll be advisors for kings, or they also have their whole own organization where they're trying to do things. And the thing with the Aes Sedai is that they're out here looking for who's called the Dragon Reborn. And so the thing is, the lore to the story is, way, way back in the day, men could also access this magic, but the men that could access this magic were tainted, and there was one guy in particular who could channel, like, he could use the magic, but he literally broke the world. Like, the magic made him go crazy, and he literally, not exaggerating, broke the world. And so now, whenever a man can channel, like I'm saying, like I was saying earlier, only females can channel correctly, you know. But now because the male side of the magic was tainted, if there is a man like nowadays that can channel, it's just assumed that they're either gonna go crazy or they're gonna die. They definitely end up dying. They either end up dying just from like the magic burning them up from the inside, or Aes Sedai will find them, and before he can re-break the world, they'll what's called gentling him, like cutting him off from the source to where he can't use the magic. So all of that to set up this story. So you follow these three kids. You got Rand, you got Perrin, and you have Egwene. And one of the Aes Sedai witch ladies, she just rolls up one day and says that they, according to the prophecy, they're supposed to be a kid or a male that was born around this time of the year. And he'll be, you know, let's say he's going to be 15 years old now. And the prophecy says that he's going to be the dragon reborn. He doesn't know it yet, but we're trying to find him before other Aes Sedai find him, because we're not trying to kill him. We're trying to help him protect the world. And she, the Aes Sedai, her name's Moraine. She gets the three kids, Rand, Perrin, and Egwene. They end up getting swept up into this big adventure of trying to find who's the dragon reborn, and shenanigans happen, and people are looking for them, and it's a whole thing. So here's the thing. Sounds great. Sounds so interesting. You're like, okay, I mean, magic, love it. Mystery, I'm here for it. I'm not gonna lie to you guys. It took me so long to get into this book. And you're probably wondering, okay, but like, this is on your top list, like your top books list. So like, if you're complaining about it, then why is it on your list? And here's the thing. Robert Jordan, it's just the way that Robert Jordan writes. He's very, wordy. Like, it takes him, he's very, very descriptive. And for some people, that's a turnoff. Usually, I mean, for me, like, I enjoy Brandon Sanderson. I enjoy, like, Tolkien. You know, like, I enjoyed Game of Thrones. And all of them, they're all wordy. But I just felt like there was just so many long periods where, like, stuff just wasn't really happening. And, like, it was just so difficult for me to finish this book. But the one thing I will say is, one, once you get to like the last third of the book, stuff really starts to ramp up and get really interesting. And that last third, I was fully invested. And number two, if you're interested in checking out Wheel of Time and you're into it, I would highly, highly recommend checking out the audiobook, because listening to the book for me is a lot easier than sitting there and trying to read a description. Like, just, you know what I'm saying? Like, listening to somebody tell it to you is a lot more engaging than trying to, like, pay attention reading a 1,000-page novel. And the thing is, so, I'm a little more than halfway through book 3, and I've only been reading Wheel of Time. So I said, after I'm done with this book, I'm going to take a break and read some other things, because, I mean, come on, it's a 15-book series, like, I can take a break. But I would definitely recommend checking out the audiobook. And the thing is, if you've never signed up for Audible before, a lot of times you can get two. Sometimes they do a special where you can get 3 free audiobooks. So I would say check out the audiobook. And I'm, like I said earlier, I am planning on doing a full episode on Wheel of Time, talking about the book, comparing it to the show. I have a lot of feelings about the show. The thing is, I had a lot of feelings about the book, reading through it. My husband, because the thing is, Anthony was the one that first got me on it, and he's a super big fan. And, you know, every day he's like, have you read? Did you read? What's Rand doing? What's going on? And I'm like, I just literally could not bring myself to read about this guy just going from, like, village and inn, and then go to another village, to another inn. But then he was the one that suggested to check out the audiobook. And so I did, and once I started listening to it, I was flying through it. So I flew through the first one, I flew through the second one, like I said, I'm almost done with the third one now. So, yeah. Wheel of Time. Book one, I'm probably going to give it a lower score, only because I felt like it meandered for a really long time. And, like, I'm not one... Here's the thing. When you look up reviews of books on Goodreads, you see a lot of people mark things as DNF, like, did not finish. And this was, like, the first time in a long, long time that I almost put a book down. Like, I'm usually... Like, for me, if I start a book, I'm gonna finish it. But, like, I almost DNF'd this book until I learned about the audiobook, and that truly saved my experience from Wheel of Time, and now I say that I am a fan. So, reading Wheel of Time, The Eye of the World, book number one, I'm gonna give it a 6 out of 10. The audiobook, I'm gonna give it... I mean, it's definitely better. I'd probably say it's, like, a 7.5. It's definitely better. And the thing that also helps, too, is if you, like I said, if you're into audiobooks and are into Brandon Sanderson, the same two audiobook readers, Michael Kramer and Kate Redding, they're the same two that read The Eye of the World, or that read Wheel of Time. So that was really fun hearing the same people from Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere in reading Wheel of Time. So that was really interesting. But yeah. I'm going to talk a lot about Wheel of Time, and like I said, I'm going to do a full episode, because the show, I have a lot of feelings on the show. I don't know if they're the same as the masses, like, but if you've read the book, and this is coming from somebody who, like, it was a struggle to read the book, but ended up really enjoying it, so, like, if I have a lot of feelings about the show, we got some things to talk about, okay? But yeah, be on the lookout for that. Me and Aunt, we're gonna talk a lot about Wheel of Time. And then after I take my break and I come back, I'm sure I will update you guys. But yeah, so that's Eye of the World. Book number one, Wheel of Time. Check out the audiobook. Maybe not read it, check out the audiobook. And then last on my list, guys, man, are you ready? This is, okay, so this is a series. I don't think this is cheating, because I did read all three of them, like, back to back. Like, I ripped through these books. So, on the same subreddit, the book suggestions, somebody was asking for a fantasy series that dealt with pirates. And I was like, okay, that sounds kind of interesting. Like, I fuck with pirates, and I like fantasy. And somebody recommended what's called the Live Ship Trader Trilogy. And I have them all. Look at these beauties. Look at this great... Hang on, I'm going to put them up one by one, because you just got to appreciate this book art. Like, this is straight, like, 90s book art. Like, look at Fabian back there. Man. Or, like, this one, too, the second one, the Mad Ship. Like, look at that, man. Look at that art. Like, it's so good. But, yeah. So, this is a trilogy. And I don't think this is cheating, because I read all three of them. They're all three books. And it's written by an author named Robin Hobb, who, believe it or not, that is a pen name. So, the first book was written in 1998, and they came out one a year. So, 98, 99, and 2000 was the last one that came out. And the thing is, when I finished the series, and I was looking up to see if there was any... I knew it was a trilogy, like, it was a self-contained trilogy, but I was just wondering, like, what else Robin Hobb has written. And when I tell you Robin Hobb writes a lot, like... It's not, so here's the thing, it's not like Wheel of Time, how Wheel of Time is like a 15 book series. Robin Hobb just writes a shit ton, like a lot. And the Live Ship Traders, which I didn't realize, is like, yeah, it's a trilogy, but it's still set, it's almost like a, if you're familiar with Brandon Sanderson, it's almost like a Cosmere situation where like the books are set in a larger universe. And so that's how this series is. It doesn't take away, I wouldn't say it takes away anything knowing that, because I didn't know that until I finished it, until I finished all three books. I didn't even realize that that was the case, and that didn't change how I felt about it at all. But, yeah, so there's a lot of books that Robin Hobb has written, specifically dealing with these live ship traders. So, it's a fantasy series, and like I said, it's a fantasy series that's about pirates. Like, okay, that's cool. All three books are pretty well received on Goodreads. Book number one, which is called Ship of Magic, that got a 4.17. Book number two, which is called The Mad Ship, that got a 4.25. And number three, The Ship of Destiny, also got a 4.25. So not too bad. I would probably say that my favorite novel was probably the second one. But the way that everything comes together in the third one is like super chef's kiss, like so good. Oh my gosh, so good. So to set up this series, you've got this family. So to set up what's really going on, right? So you've got these, this town called, it's called Bingtown, where their main source of income is like trading. Like they make goods and then we'll ship it out, and then, you know, like it's a town of traders, right? And so, but here's the thing, some families, for whatever reason, some families have like these super special ships that can and you can only access this one specific place called the Rain Wilds to get like really exotic goods. You can only access that place if you have one of these really these special specific ships. And the thing is, these ships are made out of what's called wizard wood. And the thing with wizard wood is the ships are actually sentient. So the way it works is, like, if you're a Bingtown trader, you would get up with a shipbuilder, I guess, from the Rain Wilds. And they would commit, like, you would commission them to make you a ship. And the way it works is, you have to have 3 generations of traders work and die on the ship, and then when that third generation one dies, that's what quickens or awakens the ship into being sentient. So before that, like when you first get the ship, and like with those first couple generations, it's just like a regular ship. Maybe it's like a little faster, like more sturdy, but it's just like a regular ship. But once you have that third generation trader die on the ship, the ship comes alive and will like work with you, can talk, has hands, like them bitches will be out there scooping up stuff, and like if they're fighting, they'll be smacking other ships. It's like a whole thing, right? So you've got the main family that it follows. You follow the girl, her name's Althea. It's like Althea. Like reading it is so much harder than, or saying it is so much harder than reading it. But so you follow Althea, and she's part of the Vestrit family, and the story starts with the Vestrits. Her dad is the third generation traitor, and he's dying, and then they get it to where he does end up dying on the ship to quicken their ship, and the ship comes alive, and her name is Vivacia. And the way it works is, whatever family was the one that worked the ship and was like the generational owners of the ship, they're the ones that like have this really kindred spirit with the ship, where they can almost like telepathically talk to each other and like anticipate what the ship can anticipate, like what the captain wants and vice versa. And so when Althea's dad dies, she feels like she's supposed to be the rightful captain of the ship, because she grew up on the ship, she worked hand in hand with her dad, like, you know, she's been out here on trades and all this stuff. But then when the dad dies, the mom decides to will the ship to her older sister's husband. And the thing is, so her older sister, she's not a trader, she, you know, she's just like a housewife. Like, not saying that's a bad thing, but she's not a sailor, like she's definitely she stays at home. And her husband, they're like not newlywed, but newer wed. Like, the husband's only been in the family for, you know, like a handful of years. And Althea, however you say this woman's name, she, like, doesn't fuck with him, because he's, like, kind of sneaky and, like, you know, was, like, kind of rubbing it in her face, like, whenever the mom willed the ship to him. And so the husband, his thinking is, so trading in general has like died down, and so they're really trying to figure out how can they make money like how they used to. And the trade that's really big in this time period is trading slaves. And so the husband decides that he's gonna make the boat into a slave boat, which is completely unheard of. There's never been a wizard wood slave boat. Like, why would you? You know what I mean? Like, it's the only boat that can go to this super specific place where they have like really exotic goods. So like, why would you waste all this time and effort. Like, you had to have 3 generations of people die on this boat. Like, why are you going to trade slaves, right? So whenever he decides that he wants to make her into a slave ship, Althea is like, hell no, you're not going to take my love, you know, like, our generational boat and make it into a slave boat. And so it, like, becomes her quest to become the rightful captain of the ship. And man, what a ride. Like, you can see these books are thick. Like, she's a thick bitch, and there's 3 of them. And when I tell you, this ride was so crazy, because it, like, on paper, you're like, okay, so, like, it's a girl, and she, like, wants to be a captain, so she's, like, you know, gonna fuck him over and, like, take the ship back, you know? But, like, no, that is not what happens. And the thing is, I will die on this hill, and people I've seen on Reddit agree with me that there's a character in this book that has, by far, hands down, no argument, the best character arc that I've ever seen in anything. In any book, any movie, any anime, anything. Like, anything. Like, when the book series starts, like in the first book, what's the first one called? Ship of Magic. When Ship of Magic starts, it's the main girl, Althea, it's her younger sister. Her name's Malta. When Malta first gets introduced, she's like this really snooty, snotty, little entitled bitch, and I hate her. Like, God, she was just so annoying and, like, so entitled and, like, was always trying to, like, she just always felt like she knew best. And when I say younger sister, she's, like, 9. Like, she's a kid, right? But, like, to her, she knows best and, like, you know, fuck what her mom is saying and what her grandma's saying and, like, you know, her dad is the best, and he's gonna make money for the family again, and blah, 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 and, like, God, she was just, like, anytime it was a Malta chapter, I was, like, here we go, another one. But, like, as the book series, like, goes on, and, like, the magic system really opens up, like, you think you understand what's going on in the first one, in the first book, but then it's really in the second book where the magic system really, like, blooms and opens up into everything that it is. And really in the second book, I was like, okay, like, Malta, she's coming around. Like, yeah, she's, like, still a bitch, but, like, she's not so bad. But then, like, by the end of the series, when I tell you Malta was, she was my favorite character. And I've never experienced that. I've never gone from, like, completely hating a bitch to being my favorite character. Like, God, Robin Hobb did such a good job. Like, I liked her more than I liked the main character. Like, in the book, it wasn't even about her. Like, at the end of the story, I was like, man, like, what's Malta gonna do? Like, I'm here for Malta, you know? Man, I will die on that hill. That, the character development of the sister is, like, the best one. It's the best character arc I think I've ever seen. Like, and I've seen a lot of things, I've seen a lot of movies, I've read a lot of books, but her character development, like, how she really gets you to go from, like, hating her to, like, I'm a ride or die for Malta, you know what I mean? Like, God, it was so good. The thing is, as you can see, these are bigger fantasy books, so, like, if fantasy's not your thing, you probably won't fuck with it. I mean, it's like magic pirates. Like, that's kind of like a really specific genre. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. And to be fair, like, I haven't gone out and read anything else from Robin Hobb. Like, you know, I was kind of poking around on Goodreads, and I seen that she, like I said, she's written a lot. And there are other series that are well-regarded, like how the Lifeship Traders are. But, like, I just haven't reached out and found any of them. But man, what a series. The thing is, like, I would want to reread it, but they're so long. Like, it's such an investment. I haven't yet. I'm sure one day I probably will reread them, and we'll see if, like, my strong feelings about Malta still hold up. But man, what a series. Lifeship Traders series, that gets, like, a, like, all together, because the thing is, like I said, I think I like the second book the best. The way the story comes together and the way it ends is, like, God, it's so good. So I think if I were to rate it, I'd probably rate the series as a whole. I mean, it probably would get, like, an 8.5 out of 10. Because the thing is, like, with the first book, it's doing a lot of world building. You're doing a lot of character setups. You have to introduce a lot of characters, a lot of different motivations, like, a lot of different things that they're trying to do. So the first one, like, feels a little slower, but once you hit that second book, once you hit that season 2, it starts ramping up and getting really good. So, yeah, I would say maybe all in all, I would rate the series, it would get like an 8. I think an 8 out of 10. If you consider the whole series, I think. But yeah. So, that was what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 books? Well, 8 books if you're counting the Lifeship Traders individually and not a series. But yeah, so those are my favorite things that I've read since last we saw each other. I'm sure I'm going to put up a graphic because I've read a lot. Like, this is barely scratching the surface of everything that I've consumed since last time we did a podcast episode. But these were just, like, the standout ones, the ones that I had to talk about, that I've been talking about. If I'm going to recommend anything from this list, I would definitely recommend The Library of Mount Char. Just be warned, it's weird as fuck, but, like, it's really good. And a nice little book. I mean, I say nice, but, like, it's gut-wrenching. But Never Let Me Go is smaller. I mean, shit, you can probably even find the audiobook. Like, or, like, I don't know about the show. I haven't seen the show, so I don't know about that. But, like, the show or the movie. Maybe you could check out the movie on Disney Plus and tell me what you thought. But I would definitely recommend Never Let Me Go. Definitely read The Library of Mount Char. I'm trying to put everybody on the book. It's so good. And then, finally, for bonus, oh, you guys thought I forgot, we got a bonus. I wish I had like a sound cue or something, but bonus, we're gonna talk about a music album that came out. I know, we're gonna switch it all the way up, and we're not gonna talk about a book. We're gonna talk about one of my favorite albums that came out in this last 2 years, and it's called Petals for Armor by Hayley Williams. And if anybody knows me, you know I'm a super diehard, biggest you'll ever meet in real life Paramore fan. Paramore's been my favorite band since I was like a young teenager. In my eyes, they can do no wrong. Every album they come out with is so good. And at the end of 2019, well, after, so their last studio album was called After Laughter. And after, I feel like I'm saying after a lot, but after that album came out, Paramore, like, they didn't break up, but they said that they were taking a break. And during that break, the lead singer, Hayley Williams, she came out with 2 solo albums, the first of which being this one called Petals for Armor. It came out, like, mid-2020, and it was actually really well received. I was kind of surprised. Like, when you follow a band and then you hear somebody in the band is coming out with a solo album, you always get a little scared because you're like, either is the band breaking up? Is it going to be good? Are they only good because they're in the band, or are they good, like, on their own? You know? But, like I said, it was actually really well received. Petals for Armor ended up getting an 83 on Metacritic, which is, like, pretty good. And it ended up peaking at number 41 on the Billboard Top Albums of the Year, which, I mean, is, like, pretty impressive. Number 41, that's nothing to scoff at, you know? And the thing is, the reason why this I wanted to talk about this album is because it holds such a special place in my heart. Not just because, like, I'm a really big Paramore fan, and to me, I love Hayley Williams, she can do no wrong, but, like, it was just such a beautiful album that talked about so many things that, like, personally resonated with me. So, like, when I was jotting down my little notes or whatever, I wanted to make sure that to say that the album, it's really, like, a journey through exploring things like femininity, like, acknowledging and coming to terms with your own femininity. She talks a lot about grief, which was really poignant. There's so much self-exploration and self-acceptance in this album. Like, when you listen to it, so here's the thing, when I listen to albums, the way I like to listen to, like, proper albums, like, not singles, but if I'm listening to an album, I really like to listen to the album, like, from start to finish, because I'm one of those people that, like, I really think that, like, an album, like, the way the artist thinks to the order to put the songs and the way they transition them and all of, like, the artist thinks about all of those things. So, like, the way that they put together the album, I feel like that's how you should experience the album. And so a lot of times when I'm listening to an album, or like when an artist drops a new album, the first 5-6 times I listen to this new music is from start to finish, because I do feel like you do a disservice by not taking that into consideration, right? And the thing that's so beautiful about Petals for Armor is, like, when you really listen to it from start to finish, like, it's such a journey. Like, the first song on the album is called Simmer, and that was actually the first single that she released for the album. And that song, you can tell that Hailey is fucking mad. Like, it's called Simmer, and it's just talking about, like, the rage that she has inside and coming to terms with that rage and, like, how to channel that rage into something not so destructive. And then by the end of the album, let me pull it up real quick so I can tell you what the last song on the album is called. Let's see. Oh, it's right here. I was just listening to it, actually. Yeah, so, like I said, first song is called Simmer. And the last song on the album is called Crystal Clear. And you really, through the album, you really take a journey through all these different emotions. And, you know, like, God, it was just so good. Like, so I jotted down, like, a couple of my favorite songs. So there's... Oh, it's not actually numbered. So there's 15 songs total on the album. Yeah, 15 songs total. But I would say that the ones that really stood out to me are Simmer, the first one. And like I said, the thing about Simmer is you can really feel her emotion in this song. I wish, like, I low-key wish that I wasn't putting this on YouTube so, like, I could play a clip for you. Maybe I'll try and figure out how to be able to, like, do little music snippets without getting, you know, DCMA'd. But yeah, so the raw emotion that you get in Simmer is just so, it's so, like, not Paramore. Like, it's, especially for it to be not only the first song on the album, but it was the first single that she came out with. I feel like that was a really intentional choice to set this apart, for Hailey to be like, this is my album. Like, this isn't, like, a Paramore adjacent album. Like, this is me exploring emotions that I have, like, as a person, as a woman, you know what I mean? And so you got Simmer, and then another one that I really like is Check Number 4, which is called Dead Horse. And when I first heard this album, I really thought that Dead Horse was going to be, like, the hit single off of this album, because it's, like, so catchy. It's, like, it falls into, like, my favorite type of song, where, like, it sounds like a happy song, but she's, like, not talking about happy topics. But the very unfortunate thing about Petals for Armor is that it came out literally right before COVID happened. So, you know, there was supposed to be a whole tour and merch and promotion that just didn't happen because COVID was going on. And I feel like if it would have came out at any other time, this album would have been everywhere. It would have been so well received. Every song would have had a video, but, you know, things happen, you know, things happen. So, but the thing is, being stuck at home during COVID and hearing this album from someone experiencing it the same as me was, like, so cathartic. Yeah, it was just a really good experience. But if I'm going to name any song from this album that you should check out, it's, dang, I wish I knew actually what track number it was, but it's called Roses, Lotus, Violet, Iris. And that song is just so... it's so touching. Like, the thing with Hailey is her songwriting is so good. And the thing that was I really liked about this song too is she had a feature. I think this was the only song that had, like, a proper feature on it. This little group called Boy Genius. I'm not really familiar with them, but if you look up the video on YouTube, you can actually see them all in the booth together singing, and they do a lot of the backup vocals for this song. And when I tell you this song, like, it just does something to me. Like, it just touches my soul in just the right way. And the thing with Paramore, the reason why I like Paramore so much, slash why I've always resonated with Hailey and, like, with Paramore, is I feel like every time they come out with an album, it, like, personally reflects on, like, what I'm going through at the time. And I'm sure, like, any big fan of, like, anything would say that. Like, oh, I love it because it's talking to me in particular. But, like, ever since the first album, I do feel like wherever I was in life, when that album came out, it was talking about specifically things to, like, help me through things I was going through. And this album was no different. Like I said, like, exploring themes of like rage and self-acceptance and self-exploration and grief. Like those were all things that like I was dealing with at that time that I feel like a lot of people were dealing with at that time, like the beginning of COVID. And this song in particular, Roses, Lotus, Violet, Iris, it's so beautiful. Like it's almost like hauntingly beautiful, like the way the vocals are layered. And oh man, if anything, I would say definitely pull up YouTube right now. Go listen to that song. If you like Paramore, if you like me, you'll go pull up the song. And it's, God, it's so good. And the thing is, she did come out with an album, like a part two, I guess technically it would be considered a part two to Petals for Armor. It was called Flowers for Vases. And the thing is, I do like this album a lot, but like it just didn't hit me the same way that Petals for Armor did. So that's why it's not on my list. Don't get me wrong, I still have songs from this album on my playlist. There's like two songs in particular from that album that I really, really like. But Petals for Armor, like I said at the beginning, just like start to finish, it's just such a nice, beautiful album. Yeah, it's so good. Definitely check it out. If you like Paramore, if you're a fan of Paramore, I would say that you'll like, let me amend that. If you enjoy After Laughter, the last studio album, you'll enjoy Petals for Armor. But yeah, so that's, man, I'm talked out. I felt like I talked a lot. But yeah, guys, so that was my favorite things that I've consumed since we last spoke in the last 2 years. This list could have been a lot longer, but I did just really want to highlight like my favorite things that I read / listened to. And I don't know, I'm thinking about doing, I've got some fun episodes planned. Like I said, I want to branch out and not do just books. Like I said, I've got a Wheel of Time episode planned where we talk about the show. I am super deep in an anime right now that I'm not going to say what it is because I wanted to stay a surprise, but definitely planning on doing an episode on that. But yeah, I've got some fun things planned. Let me know what you thought about everything. Like my being on video, is that weird? Is that cool? Do you enjoy it? Should I keep doing it? Because I'll go back to sweatpants and like camera off if you want. Like, doesn't mean anything to me, bro. But yeah, thanks for checking me out. Make sure to follow me on Spotify. Give me some likes. Bump up that algorithm. You know, leave me a review on iTunes. That helps a lot. Same thing on Pandora. I don't really know how Pandora works, but I know you can like thumbs up. I don't even know. Do people still use Pandora? But I get a good amount of listens from there, so that's cool. But yeah, you know, just make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube. And, you know, if you like it, check me out. But yeah, guys, it does feel really good to be back. I did miss talking about things that I like to enjoy and hopefully can bring some things for you to enjoy. And yeah, I'll see you guys on the next episode. Bye!